We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Just go to Indeed.com/Blue Wire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Ah, yes. What's good, everybody? Welcome back to Veterans Minimum. Live in Sticky Paws Studios. My bro, fist me. Gentle.
Yeah, dude, you're ill.
Yeah, I'm down. I'm pretty down bad, bro. I got a little staff.
Has the gram seen this yet?
Nah, I haven't posted it.
Yeah,
it's the first time. Yeah, staff infection.
Yeah.
I feel like I got stung by 20 bumblebees all in a two. So they took the measurements of like the infected area to so they could monitor and track, and it was 2 by 1.5.
Okay.
And I feel like in that little area, 20 bumblebees just stung me there. That's how my hand feels.
Have you seen the video of the guy that actually like purposefully gets stung by a whole bunch of crazy insects?
Definitely a white dude.
Yeah. But I wonder if he gets like what you have every time. Like you have to take the measurements. So like you, you're definitely not, what do they call that? Ambulance chasing, where you like post like, oh, I'm sick again, you know?
Yeah.
Those people. So, like, respect for you not doing that.
Oh, but, thanks, man.
But I think once you do heal, I think you should make a really big deal about it. Like, start a GoFundMe, like, the whole nine yards.
Yeah. Yo, one of my friends has COVID survivor in his bio, and he only has it because, like, how crazy it was in New York. And, by the way, he never got COVID. I was like, yo, bro, you know? He's like, yeah, but I survived it. I was like, all right.
Respect.
If that's mad what we're doing, I fuck with it a little bit. But yeah, back. I explained on the last episode with Josh why we didn't record last week. And you and I are kind of to blame for that, bro. Because we spent like 30 minutes on the 18-game schedule, and I was going to release that. And then NFL free agency was absolutely ridiculous.
Oh, dude, yeah.
So I felt like the timing of it was wrong, and that was the only episode that I had. So I just pieced it at the end of the Monday show. If you guys haven't checked that out, please go and check that out. Rate, review, subscribe wherever you listen to your podcast. The whole nine at Veterans Minimum everywhere. And yeah, by the way, you know what app I've been on a ton lately?
Bumble?
No.
More
of a Hinge guy. I got Class.
Oh,
I wasn't even.
I like the ladies
there,
to make the move first.
You gotta, yeah. You know what? That's a hell of a point. But LinkedIn, bro.
You did go on a little bit of a rant, a LinkedIn rant. We've talked about it before. You do it because you're like, one day I will be in Connecticut. You know, you'll be back on the East Coast working for ESPN. So you're like, that's where ESPN people live.
LinkedIn is, if you are a content creator, if you're honestly anybody, that's where you got to be posting. It's organic. It hasn't been tampered with bots and AIs. And
how are the ads? Are they're like ad posts?
What do you mean?
Like, you know, like on Instagram, I'll go 4 scrolls in and then I see a sponsored ad for a post.
No, you don't really see that on there.
See, that's where it's like really fucked up. Cause like,
there might be, yeah. you might see a promotional ad for Fox Sports and they're looking for XYZ position. Like,
gotcha.
You'll see those pop up because obviously you put in what your field is and what your expertise is and what you do. Mm-hmm. So they'll recommend, hey, Fox Sports needs a video editor. You could click on that. on-air talent for the MGM or whatever it might be.
Right.
And I've just been pushing a ton of people, man. Shout out to Austin in the back. I told him to start posting on Facebook.
Yep.
And his Facebook, I think, might be his biggest following on Bizarre Junkies or one of them.
He's got like 100,000 followers for sure.
Yeah. Yeah. And
yeah.
Facebook was the one last year. I feel like LinkedIn. I feel like Gary Vee right now telling everyone.
Let me just tell you, you got to get ahead. You're so fucking young right now. You just got to get ahead of the game. You got to get ahead of the curve right now.
900 posts a day. 900
if
posts.
If you're not thinking content strategy and having people follow you around with a camera, what are you doing? I love Gary Vee's content, but I go in waves with him, bro. Cause it's like, I can get an injection of him and it feels like I just ride this entrepreneurial high. And then I'm just like, all right, let me start implementing some of what this guy's talking about. Cause you could just sit there forever and just be like, yeah, I got time.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, I also do feel, and we'll get into the show in a second, but I've been ranting about this lately too, how when I got into the content space, and you'd be a great person to ask too, because we both kind of, and one of the reasons why we get along and why we built this relationship together is because you also do what I do too.
Right?
Like you're behind the camera, you're helping run a studio, you're producing other people's content, and I'm sure they come to you for advice as well once they see your resume. So
yeah,
my whole thing is when I look at creating content, I try to not chase a trend and not chase a fad that's like relevant right now. And yeah, you could get that quick explosion and burst where overnight you have 300,000 followers and you're able to monetize. Cool. But eventually there's a shelf life to that.
Correct.
Right? And the reason why I'm bringing this up is Gary Vee's an exception because, you know, he tells you his story of the wine stuff when he was like 19 years old and what he's built it to. But, you know, this, like, entrepreneurial bro, this make a LLC or else you're a piece of shit, the red pill stuff and OnlyFans chicks, like, that kind of content has a shelf life. And I feel like that content is starting to decline a little bit.
100%.
Because with the entrepreneurial bro stuff, and not saying that Gary Vee does this, but like you said, sometimes you'll consume a lot of it and then you're like, yo, I need to take a break for a couple weeks from you.
Yep.
Like, the amount of times that I followed and unfollowed him is like 30 to 40.
It's crazy.
Yeah, it's a ton. And the reason why I'm saying all this is because a lot of that content, if you listen to one clip or you watch one video, you've watched them all.
Yep.
And that's where I feel like we had this conversation back at the Win where the content that I'm creating and I always wanted to create, I want it to be a forever thing. Like sports give you 300,000 storylines a year.
Yep.
And I might be underselling that. There's always fresh. Mm-hmm. The preview show last year is going to look way different than the preview show this year. You get new information. You get new stats. You get new sports trends going on. All of a sudden now, I'm just saying this as an example, we're paying the running back, right? Where last year we weren't. Shit, do we need a $30 million wide receiver? The Chiefs just won one with no 1,000-yard receiver. I know Kelsey had like 986 and he sat out, but
right.
It's always fresh content. And that's something, man, if I could give anybody advice, because, you know, this time of year with the off season, I like having these kind of conversations too. And I feel like that's the thing that I look at. When I see a content creator, I can immediately tell if, yo, you're hot right now, like on fire, I don't know, 18 months from now.
Yeah. I always say that you fall in love with the host. The reason why you've grown Veterans Minimum to be as big as it is because you've been yourself. And sure, there's a whole bunch of new storylines, but like you let yourself shine. And I think a lot of these podcasters that like ride the wave, just notice, like, are they guest based? Are you here because they spit like knowledge or they're funny as hell when they're bringing on these other big name people? It's very interesting, the podcast world and the content creation world. I see so many people that have no idea of who they are, yet they want to go on camera and they think like it's going to work. It's like you haven't figured yourself out. So, you know, if you ever are like struggling and you're a podcaster, you're like, I want this shit to pop off. Like you got to buy into who you are and the way that you present yourself. And that is what separates people that are really good to people that are just doing it because, like, oh, everyone's got a podcast now. And so I get to see it every fucking day here. You get to see it. You deal with people, though, that have a certain echelon to them. Like the podcasts that you've worked with, and I'm sure there's been ones that aren't as good, but you already have people that are getting big name guests. Like the pedigree and the game that they play is a lot higher level than just somebody that walks into our doors and it's like starting up a podcast from nothing. So it's very true what you're saying. There's content that is like going to go away. The red pill stuff for sure. But I would even just say, bro, like if you're a guest-based podcast, like good luck. Like, yeah. Like 4 months from now when that fucking guest list runs out, like it's very, very difficult.
No, man, you said there's a lot of truth to what you're saying too. And I agree with you because when I get asked to, like I'll do Zoom calls with some schools. I've been to UNLV a bunch. Shout out to Professor Ben Morris. I know he's been by here too. And just in general, man, I have a lot of people hit me up and like, yo, I want to get in the con. I'm like, yeah, go ahead. You know, I'm not someone that's going to shit on you if you want to get a podcast. Like, by all means.
Mm-hmm.
But just know it's going to take time, especially if you want it to be good. Can you catch on with the new trend and the it topics going on? Like, I call it the Andrew Tate stuff, the red pill, whatever it might be. But people see something that works and they jump on it, right? It's the same thing in like the music industry, the new trend going on. Everyone starts to bite that. But I tell people all the time, and it sounds so cliche and lame because like, it sounds very generic, but you gotta be yourself and you gotta, people come to listen to the show for me. And I don't want to sound like an egomaniac, but at the core,
the truth, bro.
It's because people know like who I am. And if you're a host, you have to, you can't just be Q&A. You can't just be guest dependent because, yo, I've listened to shows that have big platforms. And I tell the host after, I'm like, yo, bro, I don't know nothing about you.
Yeah.
He's like, what do you mean? I was like, it's very dependent on the guest. And you have to, bro, they could go listen to how many yards per carry Saquon had with the Giants anywhere else. But you have to give them your flavor and your personality. And that's what makes people gravitate to you. And you build a community. And then you go from there.
And then you, you know, you realize like I'm a fucking superstar now, you know, I fucking bought into myself. And that's what podcasting can provide to you. Content creation can provide to you a little validation. I always feel like the best content creators were the kids that got like bullied in school, like low key, like, you know, they were able to like find themselves throughout like a life full of turmoil. And then they made it out on the other side and like they fucking live life way higher than anybody else does because they've already been through the shit, you know, and now they're just like, no, you're going to get my side for the rest of time now. So, yeah.
Fuck yeah.
That's a little fun fact.
I like that. I like that.
All if right. you're bullied in school, start a podcast. That's what I'm getting to.
Hey, I get a lot of shit for this when I say it, but bullying is dope. If you take that
and are upset about it, you're a problem.
No, I think if you take that, like, it could be very beneficial, bro. Like, I was close to 250 pounds, and all my friends did back home was call me a fat fuck, fat bastard, and it got me motivated and be like, yo, first of all, they're right.
Yes, yes.
Right? Like, they're exposing a lot of truth to what they're saying, and I pride myself on being self-aware, and I know I put on, like, 15 pounds between Christmas and the Super Bowl. And then I locked in afterwards. Now, I can't be doing that all the time. That's the problem I used to have when I was younger. I would, you know, people were always saying, depending on when you caught me, I'd be like, yo, you're in the best shape ever to, holy shit, what happened to you?
Yeah.
Right? But
yeah.
I think bullying could be dope. You know, I bully you sometimes into some conversations. And gotcha. We get into some great combos. You know what I'm saying?
I don't get bullied enough here at the studio. I am the studio bully. Like, and I do it for everyone's better being, but I'm also just like, I will clown your ass. Like, I have no filter.
Stand by it forever. That's, if you want to know if I'll come and save you at 3 a.m, it's because I troll you. If I troll you, just know that, yo, I'll call Nick, he'll come through. Yes. If I don't troll you, don't fucking call me. I ain't coming. Fuck that. You know what I'm saying? Fuck that. All right. I want to ask you a couple things. Mm-hmm. So Calvin Ridley goes to the Tennessee Titans. And you know, he's 29 years old, was chasing the money, which you always should, right? Like, I think the athlete should always go to the bag first, worry about everything after. You see it a lot in sports, at least in my opinion, where early on they don't really chase history and legacy and like championships. It's like when they get to their 30s, they're like, damn, bro, I don't know how many more years I have left. Let me try to grab a championship.
Right? Yeah.
Like now I've set up generational wealth from my family and my friends, and I have all these other side projects that I'll be good post playing. Now let me get a ring so I could be in that, you know, in that tier. Calvin Ridley goes to the Tennessee Titans, and for those that don't know, you can actually bet on where players are going to go, right? Like
that's
right now at the moment, J.J. McCarthy, the favorite is Minnesota -120 for him to go to the Vikings, mm-hmm. right? Calvin Ridley, the day before they announced where he was going, the Titans were +1,800.
Mm.
We know his track record. We know the history with Calvin Ridley.
Hashtag one of us.
Hashtag one of us, baby. Degenin' all day. It's a little suspicious, bro, that he ends up going to the Titans. It came out of nowhere. As a free agent, you do have the luxury to pick. It's the first time in your career where, yo, I have a say. Because when I get drafted, unless you pull an Eli Manning and yeah. a John Elway, you're going where they pick you.
Correct.
When you're a free agent, you're like, you know what? Let me test the waters a little bit. Let me get on Hinge and see what's available.
Right.
He goes to a team that's 18-1. I don't know, bro. I know accusations can be very serious. I'm being very playful. This is satire. However,
Nick,
pretty suspicious, bro.
When you had said that, and you'd sent that to me, and I'm like, my first question is, did the line move after Calvin Ridley got added to the Titans?
Well, he went to the Titans.
I'm saying you were saying they're to win the Super Bowl. They were
no,
18.
No. For him to go there.
Hold up. I definitely read that wrong. I thought it was for them to win the title.
No, you can bet on where players, like right now, you can bet.
Because then you said J.J. McCarthy, and I was like, of course you could probably bet on where the player's going to get drafted, but I didn't think about free agency.
Yeah,
who the hell takes this type of action?
A lot of legitimate sports books will take this kind of action. Now, they might limit you. They might say that
$500 on that.
Yeah, or $100 because right. that could be insider information.
Definitely.
You know, like if I'm in the league and I go to you, I'm like, yo, bro, I'm signing with the Cowboys. As a degenerating, you got to go and look at the odds of where is Nick Dayis going to land on.
And the fact that we punish, like, listen to this, Calvin Ridley, if he did capitalize on this, which he could have, right? You look at all the senators and Congress people in the United States of America and the way that they insider trade on stocks to make hundreds of millions of dollars. And this man with his slight, dude, he could have even been limited. Think about how tough it would be, right? If you were trying to make a real, real bag and they were limiting it at $100.
Mm.
You're not texting or calling 100 people to go put this in, you know, like you have to logically think about a way to, I don't know. Like how could you profit from this? Cause I'm trying to think if he did do this, how difficult would it be to make $100,000?
I also think when you're him and you're going to make $50 million guaranteed.
Yes.
How much can you possibly benefit? Cause you can't go to a window. Imagine Calvin Ridley walking up to the win and being like, yo, bro, can I get $1 million on Calvin Ridley? And he has the glasses and the mustache, like the fake setup and the fucking top hat.
Yeah.
They're like, yo, can I get $1 million on Calvin Ridley to go to the Titans? They're going to be like, yo, bro.
Get the fuck out of here, dude.
Pit boss, come here.
Yeah.
What's happening?
You can't make those. That's why I'm just super interested in finding out.
Yeah, because I want to tie it into something that happens all the time. And look, I think my honest opinion about athletes betting, I don't want you betting on your own team. Okay. I don't want you betting on your own league. However, there's been instances where athletes get in trouble for betting on different sports.
Yeah.
Right? Like, just naming names to make the case. Say Devin Booker's in Vegas for the Super Bowl. he wants to lay half a mil on the Chiefs, he could get in trouble for that.
Mm-hmm.
Why? That I don't understand. Now, if he's betting unders on his point total, nah, I'm like, that's that I don't like.
Yeah.
But what's different from them going to the casinos and hitting the craps tables, roulettes, and baccarat and all that stuff? What's so different? Because you are an athlete?
Yeah, I'm completely on the athlete side to be able to gamble, and I do think that if they and they will get to this point, Nick, I am making this a point right here on this show. Players will be able to bet on their teams and their overs in the next 15 years. Without a doubt. I think they're going to restructure contracts to have sports betting as part of an incentive. We are at the early stage right now of DraftKings coming in, and it's DraftKings, Caesars, and there's one other one.
FanDuel.
And FanDuel that are with the NFL. So just wait and see, dude. It's going to become way, and then people are going to be able to bet inside the stadiums. That's coming within the next 5 to 7 years. But players betting on themselves, but it will be monitored. Overs, and for them to win outright. I think that will be instituted.
So you're saying the only betting you'd allow an athlete to do would be to enhance his performance.
100%.
Not decrease it.
Correct.
I kind of fuck with that a little bit. Because like if I'm an athlete, if I put 100,000 on me to drop 30, you know what I'm going to try to do?
I'm going to try to drop 30 points.
I'm going to try to get 30 points. Yeah. If I'm plus 210 on the money line on the road mm-hmm. in Green Bay, I'm going to not fuck that game up.
Correct.
Now, if I'm betting the other side, that's where I'm like, nah, we can't have that. That is clearly point shaving. That is clearly
yeah.
an issue. But also, to your point, NBA League Pass just implemented a live betting on their app when you're watching the games for FanDuel and DraftKings.
Oh, my God.
So you could do live betting on games as it's happening from NBA League Pass. So you're watching the Suns and the Mavericks play.
Would you be able to put this in with your TV remote?
Ooh, that I didn't dive too it's far
mobile,
into it.
Mobile for sure.
Yeah, it's okay. Definitely mobile. But, you know, you're watching it there.
Dog, the TV app would be not the remote.
That'd be crazy. But, like, you know, look, you're watching League Pass, right? You're watching the game Suns-Mavericks. And it's halftime, and the Suns are down 20. Mm-hmm. Nowadays, you're down 20 in the NBA. It don't really matter. You know, 10 years ago, even, facts. Before this three-point boom, you were down 20. You're clearing your bench. You know, we got Washington tomorrow. Kawhi, you're not going back in there. Booker, you're done. Durant, you're done.
Yep.
Now it's, yeah, we go on a 12-0 run in a minute 40. We hit four threes in a row.
Yeah.
We're back in the game. So you're looking at it, and you're saying, oh, damn, the Suns are plus 400? You know how I know? Because it's on the side of my TV. I go on the app, bang, now I got a live bet. So they're implementing that too. And the integrity of the sport, it's never going to be tampered with, in my opinion, at the professional level. Where it's going to be tampered with is, I don't know if you saw that video of the Vanderbilt quarterback that's been surfacing. He got like approached by the mob. And they offered him $300K. Yeah,
this was like early 2010s.
Yeah, he's
right?
Not,
like
he's
it wasn't
not there
recently.
Now. He's yeah, not there was, now. But I've always said, I if anyone's been listening to Veterans Minimum or any of my content, follow any of my stuff on any social media platform, I've always said from the beginning, the people you need to worry about throwing games are at the collegiate level. Because mm-hmm. even with NIL, if I'm the left tackle for fucking Florida, I'm not making what the quarterback makes. I'll probably be all right. But if someone comes to me and they're like, yo, 100K, can you either miss the game?
Left tackle would be crazy because you can do a just not block for a play, bro. And that's a fucking sack
yeah.
on a third and seven. Big time third down, slip. Sack.
And you could sell it like, oh shit, the guy just hit me with a crazy under, you know, a little Dwight Freeney spin move on you. Yeah. But it's always going to be at the collegiate level
yeah.
where every famous scandal that's gone down has been at the collegiate level because the money, you can't go to Devin Booker and be like, yo, bro, I'm going to give you 50K to throw this game or to not cover by 6.5. He's going to be like, yo, suck my balls, bro. I make that in nine dribbles.
Yeah.
Literally. It's never going to be tampered at the pro level. It's going to be tampered at collegiate.
Correct. But I'm just saying, to piggyback on what you're describing here, players will be monitored at a crazy level at the professional level, and they will be able to place bets comfortably. Because there's another side of me, too, and this could be a sportsbook idea that FanDuel or DraftKings or Caesars is already thinking about, where it's you have your own book for professional athletes. Because think about the action that they would be able to provide to their economy. I don't think they could bet with Gen Pop, is what I'm trying to say. Because the numbers, dude, they would be fucking throwing down sharp numbers, and these guys don't give a fuck because they're just, they got that in their bank account. But they'd be throwing down 10, 25 units on games. Well, we're just like, why would you want them betting in the same population as the normal people?
And bro, there's so many ways around it too, dude. Like, I talk about the sports book stimulus checks when it went legal and live in New York, where I had like 9 different cell phones at one weekend. I took my parents' cell phones, I took my grandma's, my aunt, uncle, my cousins. I was like, bro, just make these accounts. They're gifting money out.
Mm-hmm.
And so, like, who's to say that, you know, you play in the NBA.
Mm-hmm.
I'm your brother. I'm like, yo, bro, you got to get me 9 points at least. You got, like, come on, bro. You want to make Thanksgiving and Christmas awkward and our birthdays awkward? Like, you can't get me 9? I need 9 points, bro.
That's nuts.
And how are they going to monitor that?
Yeah.
How are they going to make, because I could just be like, yo, I always bet my brother's overs. Like, I'm rooting for him.
Yeah, I've always, I mean, I just think it's done at such a minute level. And they're smart. They're like the fucking IRS. They start tracking as soon as people start putting in excessive units on.
Well, that's the thing. It's always random shit. It's always the random shit. And the most famous scandal, there's a Netflix special on it. I think it's called Untold or Bad Sport. But it's about the Arizona State basketball team in like the early 90s.
Yep, yep.
And mind you, this was at a time where they would show 2 college basketball games a night, and it would always be Duke, Michigan, UNC, like Syracuse back then.
Big time schools.
Big time schools. They didn't have Arizona State, and you would have to follow the game on the ticker at the bottom of the casino. Dudes were coming in there playing 250, 500K, million-dollar bets on the Sun Devils. It was the casinos and the sports books that were like, hey, man, y'all got to check out what's happening in Arizona State, because every weekend we have a group of people coming in and putting like $2 million combined on Sun Devil games. And then they start tracking. They're like, hey, man, they're up 20 at halftime, but then they only win by 6. The line was 9. Huh. Oh. Make a couple phone calls. Yo, bro, you guys got to pull up to Arizona State. Some crazy shit going down. And then the scandal breaks out. Hmm. So it's always the sports books that monitor, because they want to make money, bro.
Yeah. Would you ever want to be that role in a casino? Have you ever thought about being on the other side? Like, you are the detective searching for these people.
I think it'd be cool to add on the resume.
Right?
Yeah. It'd be pretty badass.
Like, you're just a bad, like, Veterans Minimum is just like the bad boy show for like 5 years. We're out hunting all these athletes.
Yeah. Private investigator shit.
Yeah.
Just sit at the sports book and be like, what you got today? Oh, yeah. I got Calvin Ridley unders. Oh, where are you from? Georgia. Oh.
Interesting.
You went to Bama also? Huh.
Wow.
You went to Bama when you played with Ridley, huh? Interesting.
Tell me what the fuck you bet.
Show me the badge. Show me the badge, motherfucker.
Get down on the ground right now.
Yo, staying with gambling and betting issues, shout out to Bruno Mars. One of us, baby. Apparently, God. Bruno Mars, if you guys haven't heard, allegedly has $50 million in gambling debt with the MGM casino. For those that don't know, he had a residency. Does he still have one?
No.
So he had a residency with the MGM. And the word is he's racked up large debts at the tables. by a very well-placed Vegas insider. He owes millions of dollars to the MGM from gambling. His debts have gone as high as $50 million. The MGM basically owns him. He makes $90 million a year off the deal that he made with the casino. Wow. But then he has to pay back his debt after taxes. Bruno Mars apparently makes $1.5 million per night.
Jesus.
$90 million after taxes is closer to $60 million, and he owes about $50.
Yeah. The credit line that this man was extended is crazy. I did not know he was a $1.5 million a night guy.
Wow, right? Dude, I also don't know how to measure that because I've heard of some...
Like DJs get paid the most out here in Vegas. And that that used to shock me, but now I'm like, well, yeah, dude, the clubs make fucking $50 million, it seems like, every week. So,
yo, can I tell you something?
Yeah.
Maybe because I'm not into that music, like the house
yeah, stuff. Yeah.
But bro, honestly, even with like, I'm a big hip hop fan. I've never in my life went out because someone was playing at the club.
Correct. If I'm going, I'm going to a concert. I'm not going to fucking Zouk to see Tiesto.
Like, yeah.
It's not happening.
Every time, dude, the amount of times when I was first coming to Vegas, because I've done no pool parties since I moved out here, so I'm excited for this summer. Definitely want to shredded for the summer.
Got to get that arm right.
I never went. I got to get that arm right, bro. We definitely got to get that arm right. But I never, when we would buy tickets, we would just be like, yo, what are we doing Saturday when we're there? Let's go to What Republic. All right, bet. We'd buy the tickets. And then it's like Calvin Harris is playing or fucking...
They get paid, those DJs would get paid anywhere from half a mil to above that.
Yeah, for an appearance. But
nuts.
Dude, and I know like these are influencers, so it's different, but there's influencers that make like 50 bands just to show up to a club on a flyer. So I've never been able to measure what someone's value is to a club, right? The price is right. Depending on where you're going.
Mm-hmm.
I know some people that make $50,000 just to show up to the club, and they're like Courtney from high school just because she's popping on social
TikTok,
media,
right?
Or TikTok. Yeah. So how do you measure a Bruno Mars, who's a platinum-winning artist and Emmy Awards and all, not Emmys, but Grammys and shit? Like, I can never measure that.
What game is Bruno Mars playing? Is he setting millions of dollars on fire?
Oh, dude, like, you can easily...
Seeing how fast it burns,
bro,
I take the under?
You can easily... You go to high limit, high roller sections where... I've told this story before. There is a very prominent wide receiver in the NFL whose contract is coming up.
I remember you told me this.
And I told you the exact name, but I'm going to leave it off because I'm not a snitch. However, he goes to the high roller section. Every single time I've seen him, it's high roller. That's minimum 100K... to sit. Now, we don't know what he's buying back for. We don't know how much he sat with initially. Maybe he sits down with $1 million. But dude, if you're playing 100K a hand of blackjack, you're playing 50K a spin of roulette, you stay there for 30 minutes, you can see how quickly you can run up those numbers, bro.
Facts.
It's not as impossible to think when you are in that space and you're familiar with it, because I've had people be like, how did he lose $2 million in Atlantic City? It's like, bro, how? I can give you 9 reasons right now off the top, and I haven't even thought about it too much.
Yeah.
It's those kind of things where it adds up.
Yeah, MGM's got his ass on lock. Yeah, that's 100% correct. Because now, whenever they're like, Bruno, you're going to play July 4th weekend. There's no exceptions. And if you don't, we're suing you. Is that the way that would work? Would they sue Bruno Mars for not paying that back? Is there a payboo for fucking
Klarna?
For $50 million to give back to the MGM? What type of payment plan are you on? Or this is what I think the MGM does. Yes, Bruno Mars owes us $50 million. Your credit line is still $100 million, so we got 50 more to go, Bruno. You keep playing. And then eventually over time, like, the casino gets theirs back. There's no way Bruno Mars, if he wanted to, in a session, could say, I'm gonna try to win back this $50 million.
You'd have to put like a million on a number and hope it hits, and then you'd have to do it again to turn a profit. That's like 36 to 1 odds in order for you to
that is true. That would get them there.
Man, it's crazy, dude. Like, you hear some stories about athletes that end up retiring, and, you know, everyone has vices, though, bro.
Yeah.
Like, everyone has a thing that they spend money on. It could be material stuff. It could be cars, jewelry. It could be escorts. It could be whatever, like gambling, drugs.
Cars.
But some people with their vices, it could be catastrophic, man. It could. You hear about these stories where dudes make $150 million in their playing career and then they're broke.
Yeah.
There was a whole documentary on it.
Yep.
Like, how, dude, how? But then as you get older, I'm like, oh, bro, it's easy to just blow by that kind of money, especially when you're...
John always tells us, the owner here at the studio, multiple stories about, like, one player in particular, Coco Crisp, would, in a weekend in Miami, spend $125,000.
Oh, bro, yeah.
In a weekend. And it's like, and you go over all the things that happened, and I'm like, yeah, sure, that was a kick-ass weekend. But I've done the same things in Miami, maybe not in a fucking VIP setting for $1,000, you know? And it's like the perception is just so different because you're so generous when you have that much.
And I think early on what happens, because I've seen it at the studio. Seen it at the studio where a big name, and I mean big name athlete, he'll come through 40 deep.
Yep. Everybody's your friend at that moment in time. Everyone's fucking got their hand in the cookie jar, bro.
And then I'll see them 18 months later or I'll see them 2 years later and there's three people with them. I'm like, yo, what happened to the old crew? I had to cut dead weight. Dead weight also means money because they're always like,
yeah,
you know, handout and whatnot.
God damn, bro.
And, I'll tell you the athlete off air. I have a friend of mine who her client was one of the best wide receivers on the planet. And when he first got into the league, would show up with 30, 40 people posse. Every Vegas weekend was $500,000 in total.
Mm-hmm.
And now he shows up with four. And one of them is his agent. Agent, manager, homie.
Yeah.
And then the other one is like a childhood friend. And then one other person is a random, like, most of the times now it's like a content creator, like a, you know, yeah, my camera guy. Rolling with. And
dope spot to be in. You start picking up cameras, people. Like, I'm telling you, it's the easiest way into, like, big circles. All you got to do is fucking record shit.
And yo, you know what's even crazier? I met Jack Harlow's camera guy. His childhood friend had no camera experience.
Boom.
All he said to him was like, yo, bro, I love being around you. You're one of my best friends. Let me give you a job. Just grab a camera. And now he's Jack Harlow's camera guy. He's making a lot of money because he told me how much he makes. And he's like, yeah, man, I get to chill with my best friend since fucking elementary school. And
I just click a record.
Yeah. To your point, bro, if you want to get into the content space, grab a camera, right? This is free game right now. Grab a camera. Start shooting shit for like 3-4 months. Get the hang of it. Get the autofocus. Get the auto zoom. The manual focus. Get all that stuff down.
Figure it out.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. The backdrop to be further away. Like, figure that out. Start DMing athletes, fitness people. Bro, the new gym I go to, I call it a tripod gym. There's tripods everywhere. And you know exactly what gym I'm talking about because you recommended me going there. But it's a tripod gym. All it is someone's doing biceps. And they have someone filming them. And yo, you can make a lot of money. And guess what? As a side gig, sometimes 2-3 times a week.
Yeah.
And the networking from that organically too.
Crazy.
Oh, bro, that's free game, honestly. Grab a camera, invest in the camera. It could be a business expense too. I sound like one of these entrepreneur bros now. Make an LLC.
Hey, no, seriously. Wake up at 4 a.m. Cold plunge, hold the camera.
Hold the camera under the cold plunge to really set the tone for the day. Yeah. Nah, but for real though, like grab a camera and, you know, you might get into circles with big name people and you might end up being Bruno Mars's camera guy and then you can make a documentary about how much money he really lost.
Yeah.
And then, you know what I'm saying?
No, it's just, I don't think you people understand. It's that easy.
Yeah, it really is.
You know when you're being filmed, you're like, oh, this is kind of awesome. That's the same way that the rest of the fucking world feels. So, you know, be on the other side of it.
I'm stopping here just for break purposes. 3, 2, 1. All right, George. Those were fun conversations with the betting.
Yes.
I want to have a serious conversation with the draft looming. And I want to.
We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences, so the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/BlueWire. Just go to Indeed.com/BlueWire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/BlueWire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Talk about the first round quarterbacks.
Okay.
The reason why I want to talk about it is because for years, my stance has always been I would much rather trade for a known commodity than take a stab in the first round of draft picks. Because the history of the league, if you go to any year, on Wikipedia, NFL.com, drafthistory.com, wherever it might be, pick a year and look at the first round picks. With the exception of like 2011, where it was like Von Miller, J.J. Watt, like it was Hall of Famer after Hall of Famer, Julio Jones. With the exception of that, you look at the history of the first round, a third of them are Pro Bowl All Pros. And by Pro Bowl, I don't mean a fan vote. I mean like you're actually one of the best. Like you're an all-star.
At
right?
your league or yeah. at your position.
A third of them don't get a second contract with the team or they're out the league when their rookie deal expires. And then a third of them is like, all right, George is our center.
Yeah.
We're not, he's not an all pro, but he's solid. He can help us win games. Like you're steady. Yeah, steady. Yeah. And I feel like the quarterback position, bro, do you think it's gotten more successful to hit on quarterbacks or worse in the first round?
Well, I was looking at the, I think this is drafthistory.com, and I'm just starting to see, like, over the last 6 years, I feel like there's been more shots taken as opposed to, like, what you would see in the early 2000s. Like, you had to be a really, really premier quarterback in the early 2000s to be drafted in the first round. And now, I mean, you get a year like last year where you see three quarterbacks go in the first round. The year after that, or the year before that, we only had one with Kenny Pickett. 2021, we had, what is that, five? Trevor Lawrence, Zach Wilson, Trey Lance, Justin Fields, and Mac Jones. Mm-hmm. So I do like taking the shot at this because it is such a premier position. And I think what the you can consider this the Patrick Mahomes chief effect, where it's you get your superstar quarterback on a rookie contract early, you can build so much talent around him to elevate his game. That's where I feel a lot of these NFL teams' minds are in terms of what modern day NFL success is, where it's we're going to get a really, really good quarterback, AKA what CJ Stroud's doing currently for the Texans. And it's like, you guys are good now for the next 3 years. Continue to bring in the best tools around him, and now you don't have to deal with the financial responsibility of going the way that you were describing, where it's like, let me find a known commodity and talent and shell out, you know, 60, 70 million in a signing bonus over 4 years. Like that's a lot of money, and that's a big shift. So I do like the fact that more quarterbacks are being taken. But I do think the shelf life and the way that you train that quarterback, because I did mention the Patrick Mahomes effect, he was a backup.
Mm.
He got to learn. I think this year, the Carolina Panthers would have been in so much of a better situation had you started Andy Dalton weeks 1 through 6 if he sucked, which might have happened. The Panthers weren't that good. Now we got Bryce Young coming in, but it wasn't, oh, Bryce Young sucks, because he was bad from the beginning to the end.
Yeah, like he got benched around week three,
you
week four.
You save him the fucking embarrassment. Yes, bro. Yes, he's a first round draft pick.
Yeah.
Okay, he's coming from Alabama, and now he thinks he's dog shit, which he's not bad, but like he certainly didn't have moments this year where everyone, like how Justin Fields would have a moment where, you know, he makes a 60-yard run where you're like, oh, well, you know, Justin Fields, he's still kind of good. Tell me a Bryce Young highlight from this year.
Pick sixes.
Bro, getting clapped. There's a TikTok that I watched where it was just like Panthers fans giving him shit before the game. And I'm like, that's what you don't want to have happen.
I want to go back all the way to, let's go to 2010.
Okay.
I'm going to read you the first round quarterbacks.
Oh, this is going to be good.
Sam Bradford. Tim Tebow, right? Both guys left their team that drafted them. Bradford changed the landscape of first-round quarterbacks, the $50 million guaranteed before you step in on the field. They're like, I don't know, that's a lot of money.
We kind
of
fucked up.
Yeah, we kind of fucked up, right? So you changed the game there. The year after, Cam Newton, Jake Locker, Blaine Gabbert, Christian Ponder.
Mm.
Three of four bust.
Yep.
And the way I'm specifying bust in this scenario, you didn't re-up with your team. You ended up bouncing around, and then you're out the league, right?
Correct.
Cam Newton, hell of a draft pick. I think if anyone tells you otherwise, Cam Newton, what he did with Carolina, and if someone gives you a decade, bro.
Yeah.
Someone gives you a decade, I can't be mad at you.
100%.
Right? You gave me 10 years, bro.
That's crazy to think.
Yeah. Gave me 10 years, and I didn't need to.
Solid, too.
I describe franchise quarterbacks like this. You give me 10-plus years, and at no point did I think of drafting a quarterback to replace you. I've only drafted quarterbacks. Let's have a competent backup in the event you get hurt, because mm-hmm. we never know. That's how I describe franchise quarterbacks. Matt Ryan, Matthew Stafford, Cam Newton.
Mm-hmm.
Right, we go over to 2012, and this is the draft that kind of fucked it up for all quarterbacks that you wanted to sit and learn. This is the draft of 2012 that fucked it up, because you had five guys start immediately: Andrew Luck, Robert Griffin III, Ryan Tannehill, Brandon Whedon, and I know he's a third round pick, but the other guy that started was Russell Wilson, right? But
right.
Luck, Griffin, Tannehill, Whedon. Mm. Luck was great, and then he retired. RG3 was off the team in 4 years.
Yep.
Brandon Whedon was a 28-year-old rookie, which, I mean, or 25, I think.
Yeah, he was old as shit.
Nah, he was old as shit, yeah. All right, so those are your first round picks. 2013, we had EJ Manuel.
I remember my uncle going crazy. He was a big FSU fan.
Yeah.
He used to call me, he'd be like, G-E-J Manuel. He was fired up.
He
bust, though.
The world got duped because he threw the football over the sorority house.
Yeah, like I do remember that. That's bad.
It's like when Jamarcus Russell threw a football off one knee, and it was like 65 yards. That's it's like, bro, in my prime, I was able to do 40 yards. Like, yeah. It's really not that. It's not as difficult. Kyle Bowler, remember Kyle Bowler on the Ravens, early 2000s?
Which one? What did he do?
Dude, he did 60 yards off one knee. And everyone's like, holy shit, the arm strength. It's like, oh. Congrats. Yeah.
You also can't do that in a game. So.
Yeah. You're not going to do that.
Great.
All right, let's get back to this, right? 2014. Blake Bortles, Johnny Manziel, Teddy Bridgewater. Yuck.
Disgusting. Well, Blake had a slight run.
Yeah, he did. He got to...
I would say Blake got a... What did he get injured? Because he went AFC Championship game to next year... Did they get Trevor Lawrence?
No, they got Trevor Lawrence way down the line. Way, way down the line.
Who was his replacement?
I think he just...
Sizzled out.
Yeah.
He got the whole next year.
Yeah.
He didn't get hurt. He just had a killer run.
2015, we have Jameis Winston and Marcus Mariota.
Stud.
Look, man, I know Winston is your boy, but also those guys are no longer on their team. And it's been that case for a while now. It's not like,
yeah.
You know, this was 2015. 2016, Jared Goff, Carson Wentz, Paxton Lynch. Wow. All three guys not on their team after four seasons.
That's what happens when you draft a quarterback from like a fucking a random ass school. Like, I think Bortles was University
UCF.
University of Central Florida, Paxton Lynch, Memphis.
Yeah.
If your school is better at basketball than it is football, don't draft a quarterback from that
Bro,
school.
I always say that. Don't take quarterbacks from basketball schools. Speaking of which, Mitchell Trubisky, Pat Mahomes, Deshaun Watson.
That was a good year.
One of three panned out.
Bro, just you got to separate Deshaun from the rub and tugs. Good run, especially early on in his rookie years.
Bro, there's a video of me. If people go into the archives in like 2018, I said if I had a blank slate, or maybe, no, it was the year after, the year before the rub and tugs, Watson has a monster season. I remember the video of J.J. Watt coming off the field, puts his arm around him. He's
I
like,
wish we could do more for you, yeah. Or something like that.
We're
right?
Wasting your years.
We're wasting
here.
Your years. Yeah. Yep.
And they had just gotten rid of D-Hop also,
mm-hmm.
and he has this monster season, and then the rub and tugs and the massage parlor stuff breaks out. So, but I'm factoring that in, because when he came, look, he missed a year and a half, and then when he came back, he's looked pretty ass, to the point where people were having a serious conversation about, yeah, should we give the team to Joe Flacco?
That's true.
All right, so let's continue this list, and then we'll break this
Damn,
all down.
Damn, Deshaun, you could have fucking broke the cycle, bro.
2018, right? You have Baker, Sam Darnold, Josh Allen, Josh Rosen, Lamar Jackson. Two of five panned out initially. Baker's having a resurgence now.
Correct.
All right, 2019, you have Kyler Murray, Daniel Jones, Dwayne Haskins, rest in peace.
Yes.
Then you have 2020, you have Burrow, Tua, Herbert, Love. Man, I think all four
hit,
which is, this is rare. This is the first time we went to 2020 where we would feel good about all four quarterbacks in the first round.
But listen to this, and just go over the colleges. Texas, LSU, Alabama, Oregon. Big time football programs.
Yeah.
Not these random fucking schools that just
but yo, I don't
irk
know,
me that you I think that talent level is
like,
that good.
I agree and disagree. I disagree in the sense of I'm a fan of it because I want you to win though at those schools.
Correct.
You know, like if you're at Boston College and you go 10-2, I'm down with that.
I feel it.
Now I don't want you going 3-8. That
correct.
You know, you're not a winner. But if you're at a small school and you elevate them to the point, because you're not playing with 5-star recruits on the outside.
Yeah.
You're playing with walk-ons and 2-star recruits.
How
so
you,
there, if you're productive, I kind of fuck with it.
Was Carson what you went over Carson once, right? What
yeah,
year was he?
2017.
He was 2017. How do you feel about the
Sorry,
people
2016, that, 2016.
People coming from Division II?
Look, man, Carson was
because I see what you're saying. At least the schools that you're providing are just lower level Division I schools.
Yeah. Look, man, Carson Wentz was -400. Week 15 of the 2017 season to be the NFL MVP, and then he blew his knee out. And then from there, he just never recovered. And I think also, psychologically, you get hurt and the team still wins the Super Bowl. I don't give a fuck what anybody says, bro. You can't come back from that.
That crushes you.
And guess what? I'm pretty sure there's a statue outside the arena
of
the
Nick
stadium
Foles.
Of Nick Foles.
Yeah.
And you're the man. You're the man.
You were about to win MVP.
But every time you show up to work, there's a statue of another dude that did your job and they won. He did what you were supposed to do.
It's
kind of, and look, I've been defending.
Like getting cheated on.
I've been, yeah.
Having to come home and see that.
Yeah. So your wife is cheating on you and there's a statue of the dude that's banging her outside your crib that you got to pull up to every time.
A little pissing fountain from his big dick.
Yeah. Just fucking slanging down to the kneecap. That's what it was like for Carson Wentz, bro.
Do you think Carson Wentz should honestly sue Trey Lance for some of his contract?
Speaking of Trey Lance, 2021, Trevor Lawrence, Zach Wilson, Trey Lance, Justin Fields, Mac Jones. How many have hit from that? One? And there's some heat on Trevor Lawrence, too. Trey Lance is in that as well. And then let's just wrap this up quick. We
Damn.
Had Kenny Pickett, and then last year we had Bryce Young, CJ Stroud, and Anthony Richardson. So what my point is, dude, a lot of one for four panned out, a lot of two for five panned out, a lot of nobody panned out. It's very hard to find a quarterback. It seems like it's getting worse. And it seems like just off percentages, if you have four guys, based on the history of the league, with the exception of the Tua, Herbert, Burrow, Love year.
Right.
Which we didn't know about Love until this season. If you have four quarterbacks, let's use this year's class, Drake May, Daniels, Caleb Williams, and McCarthy, one guy's going to be good, like very, very good. Two guys are going to suck. And one guy, we might have to wait a couple of years to see. That's the history of the league, bro.
Yeah.
That's the history of the league. And it's crazy. And, dude, the reason, the main reason why I'm bringing all this up, Justin Fields traded, Mac Jones traded, Zach Wilson to be traded, all within the last 5 days. And these are Kenny Pickett.
Yeah.
Like, bro, Kenny Pickett was 2 years ago, dude. They drafted him in 2022. And they were like,
He sucks.
He sucks. It's crazy, dude. It's hard to find a quarterback. That's why when you do find a quarterback, like a Kirk Cousins, you got to give him $40 million.
Here's what I will say. If anything, it allows these people to be competent backups because they are being put into the situations where you do have game starts and experiences, and that is extremely valuable to wherever you're going to be traded. And a majority of the times when you're drafted in the first round at quarterback, you're being drafted to a shitty team and franchise. So having to, you know, revitalize an entire franchise is, that's why it's such a small pool that succeed. But I like the fact that we get to see rookie quarterbacks starting. Like, I like this era and generation we're in because if it wasn't for the Andrew Lux, then we would really have to be waiting, like, bro, till these players were, what, 27, 28, till we see, like, a first full year of your potential. Like, Lamar Jackson's won two MVPs. He's 25 years old. That's crazy.
Yeah.
I think the ones that have succeeded have uberly succeeded.
Well, also, think about Lamar. He went to a team like Baltimore, which they took him at the end of the draft. They traded back in to get him because they were already good, right? The Chiefs traded up to get Mahomes.
Yeah.
Those guys elevated the team too. Don't get it twisted. But you could have went to worse.
Okay, I think you're on to something. Keep your eyes open for really good teams that move up in the draft to get a quarterback.
Yeah.
That is actually a very interesting proposition.
I would make the case that Caleb Williams, he goes to the Bears. He's in one of the better number one pick, holy shit, the franchise sucks situations out there because of, first of all, this is a team that didn't have the number one pick. It's Carolina. So you're going to a team that won, what, seven games last year? Six or seven games?
Competent.
And, you know, they got DJ Moore. They got Keenan Allen now. Maybe they snag another wide receiver. They're improving. So that team is not a real number one pick. It's like when the Dallas Cowboys drafted Zeke. The year they drafted Zeke, the reason why they did that is because Romo got hurt and it was a shit show the whole year. That was a team that went to the NFC title game like 18 months before that. Romo goes down, they draft Zeke, and then Dak comes in, you know, Romo gets hurt again. And, you know, like, so the Cowboys and Dak walking into it, like, bro, I had the best line in the league. It was different from what.
Right.
And that's what I think Caleb Williams walks into. He walks into a very good situation. But you're right, dude. So much of it in any sport is where do you land? Where do you land? It's very, very important. So let us know what you guys think about the quarterbacks. You think there's any truth to that? What quarterbacks do you think are going to be bad? What quarterbacks do you think are going to be good in this draft? I want to end the show with this, dude. Aaron Donald retired.
I know. At least ending, in my opinion, like on top as you can end. Yeah. I mean, going into your last year and seeing the way that these teams would still throw double, triple teams at him, like it's a a situation similar to the NBA MVP where it's like, are we really going to give defensive player of the year to Aaron Donald every year? Like, well, I guess we can't do that. But he is the most difficult player to guard on the field every single week. So, man, that's a legend. Where does he rank in greatest defensive players of all time?
I mean, he's definitely up there. I think he makes the starting lineup if you were to build the best defense ever.
Yep.
10-time Pro Bowler, 8-time All-Pro, 1-time Super Bowl champion. He's won countless Defensive Players of the Year awards. Defensive Rookie of the Year, Defensive Player of the Year. He came in 2nd, 4th, won it, 5th, won it, 3rd. And then Comeback Player of the Year, he came in 9th. So, like, in his prime, and he had a 20.5 sack season as a defensive tackle. I think he also kind of changed the game, too, where, like, usually defensive tackles is like, you'll probably get 4 sacks, 5 sacks. You're a run stuffer. It's like, no. You're getting Von Miller, Khalil Mack, Nick Bosa on the center.
Yeah, yeah.
As a 3 technique. And then we could also split you out wide if we need to have you rush the passer there too. I think he was one of the few guys that actually accounted for the point spread as a defensive player.
Agreed.
Like in his peak, if Aaron Donald was not playing. And also, dude, super durable. Like, you're talking about
a man who did not miss too many games.
He missed 4 games. He actually played in 16, 16, 16, 14, 16, 16, 16, 16, 17, 11, 16. Like,
gamer.
Yeah. God, he started 150 of the 154 games that he played in. And most of those were early on that he didn't start them. And then after that, every game he played, he started, right? So, yeah, man, he's unbelievable. He got his Super Bowl. And who's your favorite defensive player of all time that you've watched?
You know, when you had asked me this earlier, I have one player that's really going to, like, throw you through a loop, but he was, at that moment in time when I was watching football, just such a lockdown corner, and it's Nnamdi Asamoah.
Okay.
So for the Raiders, whenever I would go to a game as a kid, and my uncle would just be like, watch the way, I remember one time it was him versus Steve Smith. He's like, just watch the way that he is glued to him. And as soon as my uncle said that, they ran a go ball to Steve Smith. Nnamdi hops up, one-handed interception, cradles it down. And that's what, at that moment in time, I was like, I think this might be one of the best fucking corners I've ever seen in my entire life.
Yeah.
Because then I start watching every Raider game week in and week out. And he was, he's a corner that doesn't get talked about too often, but Asamoah is.
Well, he doesn't get talked about often because when he went to Philly, he was not the same player.
Correct.
And I think that kind of soured a bunch of people.
I do think at a corner position, you got to get out of there once you start losing your step, bro. And I do remember him having an injury early on in Philly, I'm pretty sure, that slowed him down that little extra gear. But as far as fun players to watch, yeah. I'm pretty sure I threw you for a loop there.
You did. Yeah, I didn't expect that. But I'm also not surprised by it, too, because he was that dude.
Yeah.
For a while. I'm going to give you 2.
Okay.
I think my favorite season of a defensive player ever was Revis in 09.
Yeah.
Like, bro, you
all
look
the graphics
at
made.
The graphics, it's like Chad Johnson, Randy Moss, Steve Smith, Andre Johnson, like Brandon Marshall. Like the names that would get 2 for 30,
yeah.
1 for 7 was ridiculous. And because I didn't get to grow up with Deion Sanders, and I would always hear about, yo, he would shut down the whole right side of the field, or the whole left side, right? Like Revis, you basically would take away your number one weapon. And he also traveled. He went in the slot. He went to the left. He went to the right, X, Y position. It didn't matter. Like he was going wherever. Like, nah, bro, Randy? Right. You're going for some Gatorade? I'm going to step off the field. Oh, you're back after one play? Yeah, I guess he's back. Daddy's back. I'm out here. Like, that's it. So Revis in 09, but collectively, the whole body of work, Ed Reed, bro. Ed Reed.
Savage.
Ed Reed was, that was, and when I got into football, he was still, like, in his absolute, like, apex. I got into football really, really around like 04, 05. Mm-hmm. And dude, I just remember I never was more fascinated by a defensive player than him. Like I would just watch him and it was just crazy, dude. The plays he would make and just the mind games and how smart he was. Mm-hmm. And then fast forward to years later, NFL Network does this like great documentary with Bill Belichick, Chris Collinsworth, and Ed Reed is there. And Belichick puts him over, to use the wrestling term, how like you made a play against Peyton where you knew when Peyton pumps that way, he also throws that way. But the tendency would be like, you pump this way, you throw that way, right? Like you kind of, and Ed Reed baited him. You know, when he saw the pump, he went the wrong way, but on purpose because he knew Peyton was still going to throw it. And he looped back around and he picked it on like Reggie Wayne, another guy who he shut down in that graphic, right? Revis, that is. But Ed Reed, man, was just, and until like the end, he was still, when he was still with the Ravens and they won the Super Bowl, he was still like, Ed Reed.
Yeah.
That's my favorite defensive player, bro.
As far as, because I the last one I'll leave with, as far as linebacker goes, Brian Urlacher.
Urlacher was a beast, yeah. I loved Luke Kuechly.
Yeah. Oh, see, that's who I had a lot of players when I played in high school. They were like Carmona knows everything. He's just like Luke Kuechly.
Luke Kuechly was at the time, bro.
Like the entire team got the Cam Newton cleats. It was pretty dope. Like, you know, seeing everybody in the fucking boots, you know, because it would go all the way up to, and I was just like, yeah, dude, I'm wearing the Cam Newtons. I play like Luke Kuechly.
Fuck yeah, bro.
Badass.
You were panthered up.
I was calling it out. I was like, yo, he's pulling there. They're going to run the sweep. They run the sweep. I stop it for a loss of four. Everyone would be like, how does he know this?
Genius.
Defensive genius.
Let's go. Let us know who some of your favorite defensive players are of all time. And yeah, man. George, thanks for coming on.
Nick, thank you.
Gentle. Thank you.
Gentle fist. We got to get you right for beach time in the summer. Tiesto.
Yeah, bro. Yeah, for Tiesto. I'm so thrilled. all right, everybody. At NickDayIs10 is you can find me. All things Veterans Minimum are at Veterans Minimum. George, let the people know where they can find you.
At Mr. George Carmona. Mr. George will get you there. I'm popular enough to Mr. George on Instagram. It's this guy.
And for those watching, we are going to announce the winner of the Super Bowl helmet. I haven't forgot. We're going to do the drawing right now with George behind the scenes, and then I'll post it after. So be sure to check that out, and we'll catch you guys next time.